You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
E aí, galera? Tudo bom? Ó, antes da gente começar o podcast de hoje, eu quero falar um pouquinho da Galler. A Galler é a plataforma que os mestres Renzo, Rickson e Holly Grace escolheram para ensinar jiu-jitsu online. Na Galler.com, você encontra os cursos que vão complementar o seu conhecimento. Por exemplo, a Rickson Academy é o único lugar do planeta que você consegue ir e aprender jiu-jitsu e defesa pessoal diretamente com o mestre Rickson Grace. Tem aula semanal ao vivo, centenas de vídeos e outros conteúdos. Também é onde o mestre Holly Grace ensina as técnicas que ele usou para vencer campeonato pelo mundo inteiro por mais de 30 anos. E na Galler você também encontra o grande mestre Renzo Grace e a Renzo Grace Online Academy, onde o próprio Renzo e mais de 70 instrutores convidados mostram técnicas, segredos, a maioria deles gravados direto do templo sagrado do jiu-jitsu, que é a Renzo Grace Academy aqui em Manhattan, em Nova York. Então, ó, fica ligado, www.galler.com. Galler é GALLER.com. Vai lá e dá uma conferida. All right, we're rolling. Jimmy Rivera, my brother. Thanks, man. Thanks for the time.
No, thank you. Thank you for having me.
How's it going? How's everything going?
It's going well, man. Just rehabbing my shin. My shin's a little messed up from the fight.
Yeah.
Besides that, enjoying. We're finally getting some more weather. It's about 60 degrees today here in Jersey.
I know. I'm close to you. I'm in New York. I'm just across the border by Woodbury, where the outlet is.
Oh, okay. I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, yeah. I'm about like 30 minutes from.
How's the weather over there? Nice.
It's the same. It's about the same. 60 degrees. We kind of like have the similar temperatures and everything.
Did you guys get how much snow did you guys get for when we got that storm?
Oh shit, we got a shitload. I don't even know. I still have snow from that.
Me too.
It's crazy. It was. I've been in the United States for almost 20 years. I lived in Massachusetts until 2013, and I never saw that much snow in my life. It was crazy.
We had a bad winter with that snow. I mean, not even that storm, just the ones before it, and then we had nowhere to put the snow because it was so much. It was crazy, that snowstorm.
You're a contractor too, right? You work with buildings and homes. What else you do besides fighting?
No. So besides fighting, I used to own a school, a tire showman school in the city.
Uh-huh.
And when the pandemic happened, I actually merged my school with Lyman Good School.
Okay.
Who was on the west side. And right now I'm actually more focused on, I've been working with the police. I've been actually teaching police officers jiu-jitsu and boxing, offense and defense techniques. So I started to put a program and a curriculum together. Right now, actually, in the town we train in, Elmwood Park, which is probably, you know, Shane Burgos is up by you by Woodbury. So it's probably like 40 minutes from you.
Okay.
It's Elmwood Park, New Jersey. The police chief and I are really good friends. We actually started a program for just his department, and we're looking to make it a little bigger. And what we're doing is, what his department policy is now is that his officers have to train with me at least 3 times a month.
Oh,
so
the
officer
awesome.
Classes right now twice a week. We're eventually going to open up a little bit more. But with those classes, they do an hour jiu-jitsu. And it's not like an hour jiu-jitsu where they're going live and rolling. Honestly, it's a lot of drills. So it's drill, 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 drill. And as they get better, I tell them add a little resistance. So you get a feel for what it's like on the street. A lot of the techniques we're using them is just learning how to control someone's body with their body, which a lot of officers and a lot of people, you know, first responders don't know how to do. And it's very important. You know, even the fire department for Allen Park's interested in started coming in and training with us. And that's the fire department. I mean, you're a first responder. When you report to the scene, you don't know what you're going to deal with. And every now and then you might have to deal with protecting yourself or protecting your teammates or protecting the people around you. So I'm teaching them stuff that are basic, that are very effective and high percentage moves. I'm not trying to teach them a flying triangle or you know, omoplata.
Exactly.
Or something like that. It's mainly a lot of positions. We do work submissions, but we work submissions so they know how to get out of them. You know, like, cop goes in and he's trying to take someone down almost like a double leg, and they get caught in a guillotine. Well, first you have to know how the guillotine works, and then I can teach you how to get out of it.
Exactly.
You know, I think, you know, some people sometimes think that you could just teach a defense of a submission of any lock. And I'm like, it's not true. You have to know how to do the lock before you can really teach the person how to get out of it. You got to find the weakness. And if you do this, how's that going
to
feel if you
do
that?
And knowing the basics, you might not even get to a position where you get a guillotine on you, right? Like, you knowing, hey, don't leave your neck up and running on the air like that, so, right? Like,
exactly. So a lot of the jiu-jitsu is super low impact for the officer so they don't get hurt, because obviously they have to go back on duty and patrol. And then we do a half-hour boxing, offense and defense. So they work some offense, and then That's we add awesome. Some defense in there. So it's going great. We've been up and going. We slowed down a little bit during the pandemic, and now we're up and running, and it's going really well. And we're hopefully we get to launch it, maybe at least in the county and maybe even the state. But it's a little different. Nothing. I mean, I've actually seen some of the Gracies, the law enforcement game. I think the biggest difference is that, you know, you could train a week and a seminar or something like that, but how good are you going to be? But if you do it all the time, yearly round, and that's the big thing. So that's the difference between us and I think with the Gracies.
I don't have anything bad to say
about the Gracies. I think the Gracies thing is great, but realistically, these officers, they got to know how to defend themselves.
Yeah.
When they go into a situation, if they're not confident, they're going to resort into using deadly force. But if they're confident and they know how to fight and know how to defend themselves, I mean, really, they know how to defend themselves. Not fight, but it's basically fighting. Exactly. They know how to defend themselves. They can approach a situation with confidence. Because the first thing we go over and what everybody's recommended to do in the Elmwood Park Police Department is they have to do de-escalation courses. Everything is verbal. Verbal judo, they call it. So you have to de-escalate the situation. If I go in there and I'm screaming at you, I went from 0 to 100 real quick. I'm not going to be able to bring it back down to 0 or 1 or 2.
Yep.
That's it. I'm fucked up. I'm done. But if you go in there and be really calm, but when you're talking to the person, be confident. And I guess the best analogy I could explain for the people listening, it's like, you know, I'm 5'4". I'm nothing. I'm a little short guy. But I've been in the bars or nightlife or whatever you want to say when I was younger, and these people wanted to pick a fight with me, you know, beer muscles. So I go, all right, the guy's like 6'1". I'm like, all right, you put your drink down, we'll go outside, we'll take care of business. And just my demeanor and how I act, the guy's like, no, it's cool, I'm sorry.
Yeah, no shit, right? You know?
Yeah, so you have to have that confidence. And if you don't, we're animals. You can sense, when you're happy, when you're sad, when you're angry. We all sense that. So we can sense if something's wrong. You're just not being yourself, whatever it is. So people can sense that confidence. So now if an officer is confident going to the situation, are they going to be likely to use deadly force? No. Is the person going to listen? Yes. And at the same time, if it does get out of hand, instead of them resorting to using their OC spray or their taser, they can use their body. And I think the best analogy I could give with that is that you have a toddler, a 5-year-old, throwing a tantrum. You know, people do different things. I've seen people just go hug them. They're going a little crazy tantrum. A minute later, they're tired, they're crying, and they're upset, but they're coming down.
Yeah,
it's the same thing with an adult. You get someone like that, or drunk, or disorderly conduct, whatever it is. You mount them, you grab their wrists, and as you're doing that, you tell them, calm down. They're flailing. Are they going to be flailing for 5 minutes? No.
No.
A minute or two? Yes. After a minute or two, and there's no effort in it, because I'm teaching them how to use their body weight, and use their body, so there's no effort for them to control someone. So with that said, there's no effort. They're bringing that person down. That person's coming down. Now, they didn't have to spray him with pepper spray. They didn't have to tase him. They just used their body to calm them down. You know?
That's awesome.
So it's very important. So that's going really well. We're working on the curriculum with that. And me and Chief Foligno have been working on it. And we're looking forward to, launch it soon to the county. And then, I'm always doing something. So there's always something going on in my life or working or whatever it is. So
that is awesome. That is awesome.
Yeah.
And the thing on that too is like if the cop knows, the officer knows how to
if you give him that confidence, just the approach, being confident, right? Because like if you get like a small guy going to a big guy, even the small guy is an officer, he's gonna say, oh shit, this guy's gonna beat the shit out of me. And the big guy can feel that too, right? Say, oh, he's afraid. He's scared of me right now. And then I will say the officer tends to get either more aggressive or more passive, which both scenarios is not good. Because if he gets too passive, the other guy's going to say, oh, he's a pussy. I'm going to go for him.
Yeah. So you got to be able to go in that situation with confidence. And,
yeah.
You know, how do you go in these situations with confidence? Well, you got to know how to defend yourself. You got to be able to defend yourself on the ground and on your feet. You know, we don't work kicks because, you know, a lot of times it's going to end up, you know, 9 out of 10 times when I'm teaching self-defense to my students, it's going to end up on the ground. So you got to know what to do.
Exactly.
Right? Unfortunately, you know, because I've owned a tire showroom school before, and that's what we teach is self-defense for the adults and getting in shape. So a lot of adults come in, they want to get in shape. And you got like the other 5-10% where they've been in a situation where they needed to, or they felt uncomfortable in a situation that they needed to defend themselves. So then we got those people to come in. And when I talked to the adults, to be honest with you, It was harder to get women in there than men. Men were simple; they would love to get in.
Yeah.
But women, it was hard for women, and the whole program I based it on, even with the police officers, is that you could be a 100-pound female and be able to take someone that's 200 pounds, because you're going to use your technique. What you have, they are not going to have that technique, and you can use their leverage against it.
And plus, she's not going against a professional fighter. She's going against a guy or a girl that's in high stress or maybe drunk or stuff like that. It's totally different.
And then get into that, what you said, which you just reminded me of. One of the reasons I love doing this program, and I think the officers love it and training, is that they get to relieve stress. I know a lot of people, they go in every job they have all different aspects of relieving stress. You know, go drinking, smoking cigarettes, this and that. Why don't you relieve stress in a good way? What's a good way? Working out, taking care of yourself, bettering your health. And that's one of the biggest things, I think, with the being able to defend yourself. The officers are basically coming in for both. They don't realize they're coming in for both. But they're coming in for self-defense, obviously, they don't have to defend themselves. But they don't realize that they're relieving stress and they're feeling better when they leave that day. So this is a stressful job. I've been in there. I shadow people, so I know what's going on, what they're doing on a daily basis, these officers and lieutenants and sergeants. And I go in there, and believe me, you get some stupid calls.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like the power, you know, there's a storm, the power went out, and they'll call, not about my power coming back in, but when's my cable going to come on? You know, I'm like, well, we're the police department. We're not sure if you call your cable provider, you know? So we there is a lot of calls. So there's a lot of stuff that's, of course, you got to go on the calls, but there's a lot of things you're like, really, this kind of call, or someone put a cone in the middle where you live. You probably don't have it where you live, but where the police department, someone put a cone to hold their parking spot in front of their house. You know, I remember growing up and where I grew up, you know, we grew up in apartments and stuff like that. They would put a chair, a cone, whatever they could. That's my parking spot.
Especially in winter time, right? Like you shovel out.
Yeah, they shovel it out.
That's take your car out. Right there. Yep, yep, exactly. Exactly.
So,
and God forbid you take that chair out and park there. They'd be fucking pissed. Break your car and shit like that.
Yeah. Yeah. I think one of the biggest things that people call about. So in the state of New Jersey, if you're on the street, you're not allowed to be there more than 48 hours. If your car's there more than 48 hours, it gets ticketed and towed. So neighbors will call on different cars that are in the block, and it could be their neighbor's car. Like, I'm calling your car because it's been there for a while. I never seen that car before. And, you mark the tires. So the cops mark their tires. They put the address and everything. And then 2 days later, they come back. The car is still there. Guess what? Ticket and get it towed.
Holy cow.
And people call all the time about it. I go, it's a New Jersey state law, ma'am, or sir, and this is what it is. You know, it's very surprising. So you hear stuff like that. I've been in there shadowing a lot and understanding it a lot more. Uh-huh. And it's some of the calls are crazy. Actually, my police chief, Feligno, Mike, my friend, he just went on a call not too long ago where they didn't realize the ice was thinner in the river as they walked out, and a mom and a 2-year-old fell in.
Oh shit.
And he was there, all there, trying to get out there, and the gas station attendant had a canoe. He literally went out in the canoe. Him and another guy was getting in there. He's like, get out. You know, it was too heavy. He literally went out there in a canoe, got there in like 10, 15 minutes because he was literally, it's literally in the middle of the river.
Yeah, yeah.
It's crazy. Gets a little kid, then eventually pulls the mom in, and then they're out there for another half hour until they can reach him.
Yeah.
And they had stuff for the ice, but it's for very hard ice.
Yeah.
And the ice was in the middle. It wasn't too hard, but it wasn't too but it was kind of soft too, so it was breaking while they were trying to use the equipment. So literally at the end, once, you know, they were there for 20 to 30 minutes in the canoe. They got it. He got the daughter and the mom out of the water. And I think his name was Tyler, one of the fire guys. The guy's 6'3". He literally had a wetsuit on. He was breaking the ice and walking down. The water came all the way up to here. And the guy pulled him out of there. You know, Tyler and the chief, you know, saved that 2-year-old and the mother. Because you think about it, it took him a half hour to finally get out there.
Uh-huh.
And now with that said, that half hour took him out there. They could have been in the water for that half hour. Hypothermia starts to kick in, you know?
Yeah.
It's cold, but it's not like the ocean, but it's cold, you know?
Oh, it's crazy cold,
and,
yeah.
And being out there that long, you know, everything starts to go numb and it's hard to swim and stay afloat.
Exactly. So yeah, hypothermia and the clothes are heavy. It's totally different. Something happened to the sound. I'm hearing you like very, very echoey now.
Yeah.
Oh, there you go. Yeah, perfect, perfect.
Is that better?
Yeah, much better, much better.
Yeah. So, what's it called? So they got the call. Got there. They probably were in the water for 15 minutes to 20 minutes before the chief got out there. Got him in the canoe. They're in the canoe for another 20 minutes, half hour, until they reached them, put them back to shore. And Elmwood Park was great. The fire department was awesome. They cleared a path to get them right to the hospital right away. You know, they had police cars escorting them both to the hospital right away to make sure they're okay. And you know, the whole thing was you see the picture, everybody's on there, but they're like, all right, well, the fire department's not able to get out, what do you do? And the chief's like, I'm taking this canoe and going, you know?
Yeah.
And I think that's why one of the things I love working with Foligno, because he's a very proactive chief. So not only that he wants his department to do well and succeed, but he's like, all right, let's get him into jiu-jitsu. Let's teach him how to defend himself. Let's build their confidence even more. So this way, we're not going to be like those cops you see. There's a lot, obviously, you see a lot of stories in the United States, here in the U.S., where, you know, there's three people and one suspect. They can't hold down one suspect with three cops.
Yeah, it's crazy, right? Crazy, you know? Crazy stuff. Crazy stuff.
So, yeah, that's it, man. So that's going really well. Getting really into that. And then just resting my shin right now because I didn't mess up my calf in the fight. It was my shin that was giving out on me, like the nerves and stuff.
Uh-huh.
So working on the shin right now. I'm actually going to physical therapy. And I'm hoping to get a fight maybe in May.
May? That soon?
Yeah.
Awesome, man. Awesome. Look, you went through a thing that I've been saying a lot here because you've been watching, all right. I was saying that you did a funny thing on that fight that I've been talking a lot with everyone I've been talking to. Because people go to most of these fights, they try not to lose. And it's a different mentality, right? Like, and I say it because they're like, oh my God, I'm coming from a loss or whatever. So I'm just going to be like extra cautious because I cannot have a loss. And I keep saying it's okay to have a loss if you go there and you fight your ass off. It's like, yeah. You know, and I say that thing doesn't take your image as a fighter down or at any level. I'm thinking like, what was the reaction after your fight? Like hopes up and super high. Everybody saying, hey, awesome fight. That kind of stuff, right?
Well, yeah, with that fight, I mean,
it still sucked that you lost. I get that.
If you look at the fight, it could have went either way.
Yep.
I was surprised at the scorecards. I thought it used to be 28, 29, maybe split decision. But if you look at, you know, from after the fight, I have to fix a couple things, mainly just moving forward and trust my hands more. But then on the other side of it too, my stock didn't go down. I mean, Dana White came up to me afterwards. it was one of the most exciting fights on the card.
Right.
It would have been even better if we were a main event, those five minute rounds. And it was an exciting fight. We got fight of the night. And, you know, it went really well.
Exactly. You know, so and like I said, your stock goes up a lot because you say, oh, holy shit, look at that fucking guy. And
yeah,
and,
unfortunately,
and
people, unfortunately, I didn't get the win, but still, it was huge. You know what I mean? Yeah. Stock went up, and I appreciate you recognizing that.
It's awesome. And I wish more people go for that because you see great fights and you see two guys engaging in fighting. And, but well, we're from Brazil, so we know Pedro Munhoz really well. So that guy moves forward. And for you to get like shy and just let one guy fight, it's easy to happen. And I thought it was awesome the way you kept pushing all the time.
All the time
with the leg kicks and everything. My wife was watching and I was telling her, say, remember that fight from a few weeks back with the leg kicks? And she's like, yeah. So I'm talking to Jimmy today. She was like, oh, it's awesome. And that's
awesome. Thank you.
And that's the image that stays, right? The fighter, the true like warrior in there. And yeah, I just wish more people would think like that instead. Say, oh, shit, I can lose and just, oh, maybe just hold it on a clinch and take him down and shit like that. But you were there fucking trading punches. It was amazing.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely, you know, obviously I didn't win the fight. I lost by decision, but I definitely think I won the people. You know, sometimes you look at Sterling and Peter Yan. Sterling won the fight on a DQ, won the belt. But Jan won on the crowd and won the people. People are rooting for Jan. And I think you look at what Sterling's been doing, he's kind of been just digging his grave with the promotion and with fans. You know what I mean? Like, obviously, it's not how he wanted to win. He said that. Yo, just say, all right, you know, this is not how I wanted to win, but we're going to run it back and we're going to fight in a couple months once I'm cleared. You know, July or August, we're going to fight and we're going to run it back and we'll figure out who the real champ is.
Exactly.
You know, that's it. That's where you leave it at. But everything that's going on, and DC said something really good. It was just basically like, he kept trying to fight every fight. I'm like, you can't fight every fight. Just let it be. People are going to like you or hate you. They're going to dig your chump or not. You know, right now, the way you're respecting yourself, you're trying to fight every fight that people are attacking you on. Just leave it be.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? It is what it is. He threw a legal knee. It looked like Jan was frustrated, but he also had the corner. You know, one was saying, go ahead, kick. The other one was saying, no punch.
Yeah.
One was saying, yes. You know, you go back in the corner.
You got a little confused there for sure.
As a champion, you should know the rules. You're a champ.
Yes.
You should know when you're down. You should know where you're at. Not mentioning he was, the fourth round was taking it to Jan. And then on top of that, you know, then you put stuff on the internet. Internet never lies. You know what I mean?
Yes.
And you go back and you see there's a tweet about Sterling about knee on the ground. And he's like, oh, well, if you're on the ground, you should get kneed. So I go, man, you just dug your grave. Like, there's always stuff on the internet and people have nothing better else to do than
they will find it. For sure.
Yeah. So I think right now.
And then that was the thing that
Sterling's stock's kind of gone down.
Yeah.
People are not as invested. People want to see that the rematch, obviously, and see Jan beat him up. And, you know, it's a tough predicament, but when you're there, you gotta sit down and think it through and understand what's the best marketing tactic that I should go with this. You know what I mean? He was talking a lot on the mic afterwards. He should have just been like, no, I just want to go to the hospital, get checked, make sure I'm okay.
Yeah, yeah. And he was with that thing too, like throwing the belt around, saying, like, I don't want this shit. That's not how I want to win. And then I think like 15 minutes later, there was a tweet that he was holding the belt and taking pictures with the friends.
And then he, not only that.
Maybe wait a day for that.
Not even much that, man, but even more like him doing tweets against Henry Cejudo. Like, Henry Cejudo, you want to fight? I'm like, whoa, you got to fight Jan again. You guys got to fight for the belt.
Shit, right?
I mean, like, you're jumping ahead already. Like, what are you doing, you know?
Yeah.
So if I was his coach, I wouldn't let Cejudo continue to fight. You got to knee hard in the face.
Yeah.
I didn't think we would win if I was the coach. I thought it would be a no contest. They would take the belt from Jan and then it will have to fight for the vacant belt. Okay? No matter what, let's say Sterling didn't get the belt, Sterling should just get another rematch right away. That's what's fair.
Yes.
But all right, he got the belt on a DQ. All right, you're gonna have to face Jan again because you know, I know he messed up and need you, but, you know, you got to go back and fight that fight again.
Exactly.
It's like a rematch. It's like,
exactly.
And you always saw that in the UFC. You and I fought and it was a close match. And let's say you beat me and I have it in my closet that I get a rematch right away, or just in general, it was such a close match and such a decided match. They were like, all right, let's do a rematch.
Yep.
Then there's a rematch right away, you know? So some contracts, I don't know about Sterling's, have a clause in it where you can have a rematch, immediate rematch right away for the belt.
Okay.
You know what I mean? I don't know if they still do that or not. Probably not. But, you know, that's huge, you know?
Yeah, I think Dana said that they're going to do a rematch right away.
Yeah, some contracts have a clause in it. If you're the champ, then you get a rematch automatically right away if you lose the belt.
Yeah, I don't think they've been doing that lately, because a bunch of people got screwed with that lately.
The first
one that comes in my mind is Aldo against Conor. It's not lately. It's been a while. But that's the first thing. I will just say, like, for the history and out of respect, he should have that rematch.
I love Aldo. They have a movie on Netflix about him. He makes a guest appearance in it. Great movies come from the top.
Oh, you got cut.
I wish Aldo didn't play into this game. So I've happened to me once. And I've learned from it. I guess this is the first time I'll learn from it. But people are going to say stuff. Don't pay attention to what they're going to say. Just go in there and fight. You know, like, people would say things about when I fought Faber, I had an interview. And I said, yeah, Faber, he never evolved. Sorry. Hold
on. It's all right.
Are you still there?
Yeah, I'm here.
I apologize.
I'm here. No, it's all
right. I might have to take this call if they call back again.
Sure.
But Faber never evolved. And he was like, you know, when he interviewed, he was like, yeah, Jimmy Rivera saying this. I'm like, what I say evolved was just like he never changed up his game. Like, he never did add things to it. He always had a good right hand. He was a good grinder and good takedown artist. You know what I mean? He was good with his takedowns. But what about the jab? What about the hook? What about the kicks? You know?
Yeah.
I watched Aldo fight Faber, and the way Aldo fought Faber, I did the same thing. Aldo probably did better than me. I'll give him that. and then, you know, it's just. I forgot we're losing track. What were we talking about?
No, you were talking about people talking and the stuff they say.
Oh, yeah.
And...
So it's like that. So, you know, evolve, but, you know, someone starts to talk stuff. You know, it's one of those things. If you're good at talking back, talk back. Talk smack back.
Yeah.
If you're not, don't let them get in your head. You know, you're going to go in there and fight.
Exactly.
And at the end of the day, no matter what, most of the time, you're going to respect each other afterwards, and you're going to go in there and fight, and you'll leave it all out there, and, you know, whoever wins, and you get that they get that right where they're like, all right, I beat the shit out of you, now you need to shut the fuck up.
And going back to this Sterling thing, I think what's pissing people the most about it is that he was losing the fight, you know, and it's, look, one scenario is like, he's winning the fight, And he gets knee in the face like he did, and he's the champ, and now he's bragging about, hey, I'm the champ, you know, the rules are the rules, and that's what he's saying. Like, it's like, oh, I didn't make the rules, those are the rules, I couldn't continue, so I'm the champ. I said, dude, but you were not, like, kicking ass on the fight. You start really hard on the first round, and you slow down a lot mid-second round and going to the third and fourth. So you could see the turn of Peter taking control of the fight. And
yeah,
he was going to come with a win
control.
For sure.
I like how Jan was defending stuff because, you know, Sterling's not orthodox. He throws random shit at you. Jan was taking Sterling down at will, which was cool. And it was a good fight. I mean, I fought Jan. And
Sterling.
And Sterling. Sterling, I can't say anything about that fight. I just had a bad weight cut and I didn't show up, you know? But with the Jan fight, the biggest thing I learned in that fight was fight to the end, fight to the bell rings. Because I coasted the last 15, 10 seconds of the round after I beat the shit out of him. He hits me with a shot. I do flash knockdown where I get hit. I'm like, oh, shit. I get back up and start fighting right away. But they give him the round.
Mm-hmm.
Same thing happens in the second round. I go, so you give him that one shot. Like, I could see if I was dazed and fucked up. But he hit me with a flash knockdown. And I got back up right away. So do you give it to the guy with a flash knockdown where the guy gets back up right away and it's fighting? Or the guy that was controlling the round for 4 minutes and 45 seconds?
Yep.
You know?
Yep.
So, but I learned it a hard way where I got to fight all the way to the end of the bell, end of the round. And that's what I've been practicing and saw in Pedro fight. I was fighting all the way to the end of the bell.
Yes.
I knew where I was at. Even when I heard the 10-second mark, being smart about it. And from there, I mean, I think going back to it, look at the fights, not trying to brag, but I think out of all the fights, I probably gave Peter Yan his hardest fight.
Yeah, I believe.
And the next to that is Aldo. And unfortunately, if Aldo doesn't cut so much weight to 35, I think he would have beat Yan. But he just cuts a lot of weight, and that's a lot of weight for him to cut. And from there, you know, those later rounds, it adds up. It's hard.
For sure. For sure. So what do you think? Say you want to come back and fight again, you know, like as early as May? Do you have anyone in mind?
Yeah, I'm hoping to fight May. I'm hoping to fight, you know, be awesome fight Frankie Edgar. He's from Jersey. He's a legend. And I would love to, you know, he didn't win his last fight. I didn't either. I would love to get in there and fight him. I think that would be a good fight and good for the fans.
Yeah, Frankie got KO'd badly on his last fight. I'm not sure he's ready for May, though, because he might have, like, a six-month suspension or something like that, right?
Oh, really? That long?
Yeah, I think so.
I'm not sure then, yeah. I don't know.
I had a friend there, and they say he was down for a while, like, before. Like, the cameras cut him out, and they were talking other stuff, but say Frankie was in bad shape after that KO.
Gotcha. Yeah, I mean,
it's.
I did hear. I mean, when was that fight? Being in February.
I think so.
So I guess I don't know. I don't know how long you're out for with something like that, with a knockout like that. You know.
Let's hold on. Let me check the rankings. Hold on. And we'll see. So, are you staying in featherweight? Oh, the Cody Stamen fight was featherweight. Yes.
Yeah, because that was the last. Yes. That was like a 5-day notice fight.
So I know. Yeah. That's what messed me up here. Hold on a second. Actually, I'm gonna help you pick up a fight.
Pick up a fight. Okay.
We have Rafael Assunção. He's from Brazil. There's Dominic Cruz. There was Frankie Edgar. Marlon.
Maybe the Marlon fight? The Marlon fight would be good?
Marlon fight would be good. Marlon's coming from a loss too, right?
Marlon Moraes, yeah. I mean, when did he fight? In December?
I think so. Also, let me see. Yeah, his last fight was December against Rob Font.
Yeah.
So, in...
I couldn't believe that fight.
Yes. He fought Corey Sandhagen, and he got caught on the Fight Island card.
Yeah, spinning heel kick or spinning wheel kick.
And I just think he came back too soon from there, you know, like just it's like, hey, I got caught, nothing happens. But I think just the prep, the weight cut and stuff like that, you should give your body a little time to at least to recover from that weight cut. And I think he came back way too soon. He fought less than 2 months after. You were on Fight Island. How was the experience there, the timing and the sleepless?
We didn't see the sun at all. And I mean, the island was nice. We had it all to ourselves. But unfortunately, we had to stay on like Eastern Standard Time.
Uh-huh.
And it was hot, very hot. The food was great. It was just super hot, super humid. It was like 116, 117 degrees while I was there.
Wow.
And it was humid too. It wasn't like a dry heat.
Uh-huh.
So that sucked a little bit. You know?
Shit. Yeah. And this staying on like New York's time, it was part of the strategy, because some people try to do both and gets really messy, right?
No, it was on purpose, because that's what time they were gonna have us fight.
Uh-huh.
So we were going to bed every day at like 9, 10 a.m. and waking up at like 6 p.m.
Yeah, oof, that's
so bad. that was on purpose, because when they had us fighting and all that, so we didn't want to adjust to Abu Dhabi time. We wanted to adjust to stay on our time, which helped when we got back home. We were still on our time.
Yeah, look, I'm gonna ask a question about a fight. You fought one of the this kid was one of the highest promising kids in Brazil, Thomas Almeida.
Yeah.
I think they put so much hype on the kid and kind of like messed him up, you know, like the pressure, because the Brazilians are kind of like those hooligans in England, man. Like they put so much pressure on the team, on the guy and stuff like that. And I really think he felt that. But he's fighting Sean O'Malley.
I think that's a tough fight for him. He's been out for so long, too. Yeah. I mean, that's a tough fight, I think. I don't know which way it's going to go.
Uh-huh.
I'm leaning towards... Obviously, I would rather have Almeida win that fight than Sean. But I don't know which way it's going to lean to be honest with you. I don't know.
What do you think this... do you think Sean O'Malley has all that... Not just the talk, but all it takes in the case. I just think it's too soon. You have a kid that just talks nice and talks a lot of trash, and he fights like really plastic movements and stuff like that. And I think that makes the crowd enjoy it. But
yeah, I think if anything, it's gonna be it's. I think there's a lot of hype behind O'Malley, but I don't think he's just ready yet. I think he needs a little more experience.
Yeah, some hours.
And that's it. And I think that experience will come over time. But now he's already in the UFC, so with that said, he's gonna have to perform. They're looking at big things with him. And when you start getting up higher in the rankings, they're not just tough, but they're good.
Yes, yes. I had Darren Till on a podcast, and he said that, and this was something I never really gave like much thought about until he talked. He said, look, everybody in the UFC, it's fucking tough and it's a hard fight. Any fight, it's going to be a hard fight. But when you get into the top 10, that's a different universe.
Yeah, for sure.
Right?
Top 10, top 15 is different. You're fighting guys that are not just tough, but good too.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Technique-wise.
So look, awesome fight. Thanks for being a warrior there. We all loved to watch you fight. And let's see. I'm gonna text Marlo and I say, hey, let's see what happens.
All right, man.
I think it would be an awesome fight. I think it would be an awesome fight.
I appreciate it. Yeah, I think it would be. I mean, it'd be a nice rubber match. He beat me the first time we fought. It'd be nice to get that win back, especially that the fight, you know, didn't go the distance. So it'd be nice to get back in there and fight. I'll see what happens, man. Hey, let me know. You know, maybe you're the new matchmaker.
Jimmy, thank you so much, brother. Take care. I appreciate the time. We'll stay in touch.
Anytime, man. Have a good one.
Thanks, brother. Bye.